Hello, young man. May I come in?
Hold on a second, pal. You're a stranger. You can't just walk right in. What's the secret password?
I would very much like to eat your kidneys.
All right, checks out. Come on in.
Oh, thank you.
Law enforcement has officially issued a statewide emergency. A deranged serial killer known only as the Friendly Kidney Biter has escaped from Danvers State Mental Hospital. Police are urging citizens to lock their doors.
Stupid radio. I'm so sick of these true crime podcasts. Listen, man, sorry about the whole password thing. My best friend Adam was brutally murdered a couple weeks ago. You can never be too safe, all right? I mean, you just heard, I guess. There might be a psycho killer out there. Anyway, take your shoes off. Get comfortable.
This is for you.
Oh, you got me a present. An eyeball? Have you been looking at my Amazon wish list? This is the Black Lodge Complaint Department, your source for all the Twin Peaks ire you could possibly handle. I'm your host, Daniel Williams.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Bauer.
And can you believe it? We are back once again for another episode of Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks Season 2 is quite long, isn't it, Daniel?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever watched anything this long in my entire life.
Well, the first season of Lost was up there, like 20-plus episodes.
Yeah, and ABC pushing it to go further and further, yeah. And they didn't learn with this eventual mistake, and, well, I'm sure they didn't even learn with Lost.
No.
ABC, failing left and right.
This is Season 2, Episode 17, titled Wounds and Scars. The original air date was March 28th, 1991. If you recall, episode 16 was in February 1991. This was after the six-week hiatus. So, I mean, the show was on the verge of being canceled a month ago, and enough people wrote in that ABC was like, you know what, we've come this far, let's finish this and then cancel it. So they're back with a sense of renewed purpose, for, you know, with everybody like, God damn it, we're going to give this our best, even though we know we're probably weeks away from being out of a job.
Adam, shall we?
Dan, I was thinking about this. Maybe we can jump into this episode.
Okay. Let's cannonball in. Scotch splash!
Harry is just getting tore up at the bookhouse.
You called it the bookhouse, and I didn't realize until way later in the episode. I assumed we were in Truman's one-room shanty, but once I realized it was the bookhouse, I was like, oh yeah, there's no way Truman owns a book.
And what a noir opening with it sexy is, saxophone and the images of better times between Truman and Josie as he twirls the bottle of bourbon.
Yeah, I wish that we could have seen some B-roll or something, some scenes of Truman and Josie enjoying each other's company that we hadn't seen previously on the show, just to kind of flesh out the idea that it was a long relationship, that they had other times together.
Yeah, instead we got the greatest hits.
Yeah, we just, exactly. Hawk, ever the bro, shows up with one of Norma's breakfasts, special made just for Truman, and dude looks like he could use a good meal.
Scrambled eggs, hash browns, bacon.
Delicious spread. Truman probably hasn't eaten food in 24 hours. I'm willing to bet that he went home and immediately started drinking and hasn't stopped for at least a day. They chat a little bit about the Earl case.
Because that's what's occupying the sheriff's department.
Right, yeah. But other than that, Hawk just kind of leaves him be. He knows when someone just needs time to grieve.
He's got to do it his own way.
Yeah. Hawk's a smart guy. And we take off from there.
Yeah, another new character.
Yeah, like this needs to happen.
We recently met John Justice Wheeler. Here we are again meeting Annie Blackburn, which is sister of Norma Jennings.
This is a young Heather Graham playing Annie.
The first time I saw Heather Graham was License to Drive with Corey Haim and Corey Feldman. Do you remember that movie?
No, I do
not. She was in that. She was Corey Haim's love interest.
I think she's America's love interest. She escaped a convent. I say escape because I think that's, in my mind, that's the only way you can leave a convent.
And knowing what we know now about the Catholic Church, I'm not surprised that she just tore out of there like, I gotta get out of here.
Yeah. She shows up ready to work. She wants to earn her part. She doesn't want any handouts from Norma. She wants to earn her keep.
I'm sure you're happy we're meeting a character that isn't a scumbucket.
Yeah, although, you know what? We met a lot of characters in season one that I liked that ended up being scumbuckets in season two. So, you know, give her an episode or two.
Yeah.
We pan over to everyone's favorite character, Major Garland Briggs, and he is enjoying breakfast at the counter. And it seems like he's trying to start a conversation with Shelley. He says,
compelling.
I think he was saying the pie was compelling, and she didn't really know how to respond to that. She just gave him his check. She's kind of an asshole.
Yeah,
self-obsessed.
She's back to work, and I guess maybe she's out of her rhythm, you know, with the customers, and so she needs a couple days, but it was rude.
Yeah.
It was rude.
And Major Briggs has been through enough. He doesn't need sass when he's just getting a piece of pie at the Double R.
Maybe she's just sick and tired of the last name Briggs. And she's like, you know what? I don't have time for any of you.
Yeah, you'd think that maybe she would be a bit more respectful towards, you know, her boyfriend's dad, but whatever.
As far as we know, Major Garland Briggs doesn't even know that they're dating.
Yeah, you're probably right.
The log lady just walks up and touches his scar.
Yeah, really
God
bursting
damn
his personal bubble there.
Also very rude. Consent is important, log lady Margaret. And she sits down and it looks like something important is going to happen, but we don't get to see it.
Immediately cuts away.
Yeah, immediately.
Okay, great.
All right, well, I'm sure whatever that is, we'll come back later.
Well, we're following Hawk now at the sheriff's department.
Yeah.
He's filling in Cooper on what's going on with Truman.
Yeah, they're all really concerned. I mean, Harry just went through some shit, and they're all super close bros.
Cooper, kind of, it's odd. He cracks a smile when he realizes he has the autopsy results from Doc Hayward. Josie's autopsy results, yeah, to be specific here. Most notably, she weighed only 65 pounds.
Yeah, what?
After
what?
She died. Josie wasn't a heavy woman, but she definitely wasn't 65 pounds.
No, she was probably like at least 82.
Maybe it has something to do with what Cooper saw when she died.
I guess. That's really the only important thing that we learn here, other than Hawk hates paperwork, and he's glad that Cooper is in charge now. I'm glad that he never takes a turn, you know?
Taking a turn doing what?
For the worse, you know?
Oh, that he's actually
Josie turns,
consistent.
Pete turns briefly. Hawk is steadfast. He's strong. I like him.
Good.
And in the distance, we hear a dumb flute. And we know that we're in the woods. Windham Earle is right off screen.
He's really obsessed with that flute, isn't he?
Adam, I can't grasp this character.
Windham Earle is kind of a wet noodle for you, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I've made it pretty clear that I don't think he's a very compelling villain. But maybe it's just because I don't understand the character.
Yeah, his motivations are pretty murky right now.
They are.
We'll get some clarification on that probably in the next couple of episodes.
Yeah, well, I said it last episode, but I think part of the problem is that this show was built around a mystery. And now that we're done with a mystery, they're trying to retool as they go what the show is supposed to
be. Instead of one central mystery, they thought it would be a good idea to give us, you know, five, but it really didn't work.
It did not work. And I have in my notes, is he snorting coke? He seems like a coke addict. Now, I do not remember why I'm asking this question.
He was talking about being out in the woods and how it was kind of clearing his nasal cavities. And it was something to do with his sinuses and the woods.
Yeah, and I think he's just such a weird character. I can't pin him down. So he's doing some monologuing. It's very clear that this is his thing. He likes to just talk at people. And I guess Leo is the perfect counterpart for that because he can't converse.
As Wyndham is flipping through the paper, he finds Cooper's next move, which
And he's pissed over.
He's very pissed because he realizes what's happening. He's trying to force a stalemate, and Wyndham knows Cooper well enough that he thinks that he wouldn't be making these moves and he must be getting help from somebody, and he's right.
He is, but so what? Or maybe Cooper took some lessons, you know, learned a little bit more about the game. I mean,
it's a possibility. I mean, Earl is watching him pretty closely, though.
Maybe he's playing to a stalemate because he knows it's the best possible outcome. And why would you try to beat the man you know you can't beat and have never beaten before? Like, what? That's crazy.
And he's so crazy, he is going to exact some kind of terrible revenge for this transgression of Cooper getting help playing the game that is just supposed to be Earl and Cooper.
He's also mad that he's getting help, but Wyndham Earl is not acting alone either.
Yeah, he's got Leo over there.
He's got his very own Igor, yeah.
Yeah, you think he would have given him a new bathrobe. Maybe he's cleaning it for him.
He just took it down to the river and he's just, you know, kind of rinsing it out, yeah. The scene ends with some abuse towards Leo and Earl vowing, many people are going to regret.
Yeah.
Whatever.
We're supposed to be worried that he's going to lash out and harm some of our favorite characters.
Right.
Are you worried about that, Dan?
Yeah, well, unless he goes after Pete, I think we're fine.
Pete and Hawk.
Yeah, unless Pete and Hawk are in danger, I am okay with this. So we go to the Great Northern, and I could have sworn that Dick Tremaine was mauled to death by a bear. Is that, I just dreamt that?
He's back.
The little
Nicky storyline is not back, but he's back. They found a use for him.
Yeah, Nicky's gone. No real explanation. Like, it's just, shut up. Stop dealing with that. You guys are dumb. And they're like, oh, okay, it's fine.
Yeah, they had a little cry session, you know. Yeah, and then through it.
Yeah,
and there we go.
I guess
something's going on at the Great Northern.
Yeah, was this brought up in the last episode, and I just couldn't remember it?
Maybe I don't remember. I don't remember.
You don't remember it. I don't remember it. This is just happening.
But it's related to that
sure
meeting about the weasel. So okay, something's going on. He's got some models there, right?
I guess.
And they're setting up a stage behind them, and
apparently,
people are coming and going, and Audrey's trying to get a handle of the situation. She's running around with a pen and a clipboard.
She seems just as confused as I am about what is going on in the Great Northern.
Just roll with it, you know?
You know, as Audrey is, I will too. And a Mr. William Zane wants to kind of show up and sweep Audrey off her feet.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember the character's name. So he wants to take her on a picnic?
Yeah, didn't we just
We were just on a picnic last episode.
Yeah. Someone was on a picnic tear.
Yeah. And that's the only part of this scene that made any sense to me. I could grasp wanting to go on a picnic. Everything that happened before that was insane.
You're so confused, you're not invested. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, well, I mean, Dick Tremaine is involved. And Adam, I swear, a cougar ate his face, right? I mean, it couldn't have just been a dream. We are back at what I'm still calling Truman's Shanty, apparently the bookhouse. And this time, Cooper shows up.
Yeah, and a misguided attempt to snap Truman out of it.
Whoa.
Yeah, he just kind of rolls up on Truman. Put on your big boy pants, Truman.
Yeah.
This lady was a hardened criminal, and just starts rattling off some of the charges she's been slapped
Truman
with.
Is in a state. The love of his life was just died mysteriously in front of him.
Do we want to listen to some of this?
I think that we should listen to. Let's listen to Josie's record, because the way that Cooper just starts to throw this shit out, what did he expect? How did he expect Truman to react?
Well, let's listen to it.
Fine, let's listen to it.
In addition to killing Eckert, trying to kill me, and killing Jonathan in Seattle.
Close cases.
She's also wanted for a variety of felonies in Hong Kong.
I don't need to hear this.
She's also had two prostitution arrests, Harry.
Harry, eventually it's going to help you to know she was a hardened criminal, a killer. Get out of here.
I know it's not easy right now.
Just get out of here. Get out of here! Go!
Kind of uncharacteristically cold for Cooper to
what
just...
What the fuck, man?
This is a very robot, mechanical Cooper. You shouldn't be upset about this. Here are the facts. Let's get over it and move on.
Truman doesn't need to hear that
maybe
shit.
Maybe it's a cry for help from Cooper. He just can't handle things at the sheriff's department.
No, don't do that to Cooper. He is well established in the show as being a capable lawman. He doesn't need the kind of help that a sad Truman can offer him.
Yeah, so he just pisses off Truman.
Yeah. Like, I would kick him out of my shanty, too.
Yeah, Truman just asks him to leave politely a couple times before he just says, leave now! And then this dramatic cut to black for commercial.
Yeah.
I guess that was supposed to be, like, heart-stopping in the 90s when Truman screams like that. You're like, whoa. It's like when your dad yells at you. You're like, oh, shit, I really screwed up this time.
I don't think he does a very good job as a shouting guy, you know? He doesn't have a very sincere, angry
face. Gone down!
Yeah, his face doesn't look like it could be angry. That's just acting. He didn't make me feel like he really felt that way. I could see that he was just playing his role. And I'm an expert at acting, so, you know. Blue Pine Lodge!
Oh, hey. Yeah, we kind of have this weird tracking shot on Catherine. It's almost, you know, like a slasher film.
Yeah.
Because someone is creeping up on her.
Again, this is where the director or maybe the DP doesn't realize that people have peripheral vision. And Catherine would totally be able to see this person
standing there in the doorway.
Yeah, or maybe she's got tunnel vision. We don't know that much about Catherine. Maybe she can't see.
Well, this person is Jones,
yep.
Eckhart's female assistant. Catherine is not playing any games here. She just immediately pulls out, I think, a Smith & Wesson and just points it at Jones.
Yeah.
Call me a healthy skeptic. She wants her out of there. But first, Jones has something for Catherine.
She gives her a gift?
Yeah, very slowly.
It's a very nice wooden box.
Yeah, she pulls out a black box and gives it to Catherine. We'll just put that on the mantle.
Yeah, I think it's a very ornate carved wooden dildo.
In the background, there is...
Don't ignore me.
I am ignoring you.
This scene was dumb. It did not need to be here.
And we're gone.
Skadoosh. We're gone. Yeah, good, right? We're hitting up a place we don't often visit, the Hayward residence. So Dr. Craig shows up.
Yeah, and I was tickled that you didn't realize until the end of the interaction that it was actually Wyndham.
And I wasn't even sure then.
So he is a master of disguise.
That
so
mustache
maybe
did.
He's cooler than you think, Daniel.
He is not. So who is Dr. Craig? Well, Donna doesn't recognize the name and
invites him in 2.5 weeks after her best friend was murdered, after Maddie was murdered, yeah. after, you know, a vagrant was just murdered and stuffed into a chair at the sheriff's station. You don't invite strangers in, lady.
Yes, Adam. Yeah. I mean, what is she doing?
Trying to get killed.
She is.
Save me, Cooper.
Yeah. So, okay. So Dr. Craig, he was on his way to Spokane to speak at a conference, and he just wanted to pop in and see how his old pal Hayward is doing after all these years. And Dr. Craig seems to know a lot about the Hayward family.
Yeah, Earl is doing his research, apparently. But we know that Donna is one of the three queens that we suspect that Earl is targeting.
Yeah. He's making small talk. I don't know if you heard, but he does the classic old man trope. He's like, you have two sisters, right? Are they as beautiful as you? And you're like, ugh, you're like 100 years old. I'm a 17-year-old girl. What? Why are you saying that? Ah!
He is laying the creepy on thick here.
Yeah. Wyndham Earl, just a little bit of advice. If you're going to be a psychopathic murderer going around killing a bunch of people, try not to be also a creep in public. Try not to draw attention to yourself. And I know he's wearing the outfits and stuff, but like we can see you most of the time. Granted, it took me the whole scene before I realized it was him, but I was like, oh yeah, that was Earl. Okay. So I still saw you bastard. Like we know you're out there being a creep and being a murderer. Separate the two, I guess, is what I'm saying.
That's some solid advice for the serial killer. Thanks, Dan. Well, before Dr. Craig, a.k.a. Wyndham, leaves, he gives a phone number to Donna and tells her dad to call him and gives her a gift and makes her promise not to open it.
Yeah.
And that's that.
Adam, can we skate on down the road to the sheriff's department? Pete gone a little mad himself here.
Yeah, he has got several games of chess set up.
He's got a room of chess boards. It's pretty amazing. And he's trying to figure out a way to play to a stalemate without losing any more pieces.
He's researched different stalemates or different examples.
And yeah.
It's tough. He's not finding a way to do it without at least losing some pawns in the process.
I mean, he's doing history research. It's pretty impressive coming from this character who, up to this point, we've seen
putting fish in percolators and
yeah. I like that Pete steps up. He takes on this responsibility. He knows how important it is. He plays 20 games of chess at once.
Lucy and Andy are also playing.
They're back.
Chess. Yeah, they just appear out of nowhere.
They've been gone for like 3 episodes.
Yeah.
When are these two crazy kids just going to tie the knot? That's what I want to know.
Seems like everything's okay now between them. That really hasn't been much talk of her pregnancy, but
I
assume she's still pregnant.
Pete taught those two lovebirds to play chess. So they're helping out.
And Lucy wins.
Lucy wins because in true Andy fashion, he really just, he doesn't have a firm grasp of the rules.
No, he thought the knight didn't always need to do the hook move or whatever.
Yeah, it's a privilege to do the hook
move.
Come
on, Andy.
Meanwhile, Briggs and the log lady have come to visit Cooper.
Yeah, looks like we're going to get some follow-up between that interaction they had at the Double R.
Good. We don't get to see it happen, but we get to see the aftermath. Shit is going down. So we sit down, and what is happening here?
Cooper's drawing the symbol that was found on Briggs's neck after his experience.
Don't tell me what it means, but do we learn what it means?
What the symbols mean?
The symbols mean?
Not explicitly. I mean, I could be wrong here, but, you know, a lot of the images and the symbols used in the show will continue to pop up and play an important part of the return.
That fucking return. That's where all the cool shit happens.
There's a lot of cool shit that happens in season two. You just didn't appreciate it. Mm. Well, okay, so the whole point of this is that the log noticed Briggs's tattoos and was like, hey, Margaret, you've got a similar tattoo, or they look like birthmarks.
Burns, yeah.
Burns or birthmarks, but she shows Cooper on the back of her leg. She's got two peaks.
A tattoo of twin peaks, if you will.
Yeah, well, I mean, the two mountains in Twin Peaks are Whitetail Mountain and Blue Pine Mountain, so it could be either of those. I don't know.
Well, that's just proof that she, too, as a child, was abducted by aliens. So let's hear a little bit about Margaret's abduction.
I was 7 years old. I went walking up in the woods, and when I got back, I was told that I had disappeared for a day. All I could recall was a flash of light, and that mark was on my leg.
We all three recall the light.
And also the call of the owl.
Yes, I remember.
The only other time I saw that sight and heard that sound was right before my husband died.
So they both saw flashes of white light, including Cooper, and heard owls. And they both have almost no memory of their time away. Margaret was just a kid, 7 years old.
Yeah. She was exploring the woods, and when she got home, she'd been told she was gone for a day. That's scary.
It is. The White Lodge, we're assuming, is a place of benevolence, but not remembering what happened and disappearing for days.
Taking kids.
Pretty terrifying.
Yeah. So they're both connecting something, you know. They're not sure, but it seems like it's getting interesting. I do, you know, whenever the show gets interesting, I like to make sure I say that out loud so you know, our audience knows, I'm here for it.
It's just a shame it wasn't more prevalent in the show, that a lot of the other stuff wasn't trimmed away, and this is what, you know.
It seems really important, so we should just focus on it.
We should have got this Briggs and Log Lady stuff like episode 10 or 9, like a couple of episodes after Leland died, not 8 episodes later. It's kind of...
Yeah, I mean, because I have to assume that the occupying spirits, or as I like to call them, the aliens, are directly connected to the lodges.
They are.
So it would have been a nice connective thread there to just move along to this, but... We got what we got.
Not much to chew on, but at least it's something, and we can feel that the end game is getting set up here, that they know it's coming to an end. They want to at least try and go out with a bang.
Well, we're not going to go out with a bang quite yet, but we are going to take a quick break.
After tragedy strikes.
Melissa, it's really nice of you to come back for the funeral.
A D&D group reunites.
So, is Dylan coming?
What up, man?
To celebrate the life of a friend.
Take that, you wretched sea hag!
Until something happens. Now they're struggling to survive in a world they don't understand.
You got me. Game over, man. Game over.
Group as they fail through time and space.
I dropped it, you guys.
Oh, David.
Buddy.
Run!
A beginner's guide to interplanetary destruction.
That's what I'm calling my penis as of 8 seconds ago.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Black Lodge Complaint Department. We are discussing Wounds and Scars.
We've got our blanket out in the meadow. We've got a basket full of cheeses, etc.
Some charcuterie.
Yeah, we're here for a picnic.
Can I feed you an apple, Dan?
A whole apple. Hold it while I eat the whole thing. Mr. William Zane is singing to Audrey.
Sexy scene.
Yeah.
Whew. Pulling on my heartstrings. A couple of good-looking kids, though, man.
I mean, I just have to ask, what if a boulder broke loose from somewhere like a mountain and crushed them both to death? Would that be so bad, Adam? Really? I mean,
does it look like March out there? They've got a lot of leaves on the ground. Like, it looks
really warm, but...
They must have been shooting in California.
Yeah. What do I know about mountain weather? I've never been on a mountain. I assume they're cold. Maybe they're nice and toasty all year round.
So there's really not much going on here, just a picnic.
Billy Zane singing with a full head of hair because he did have one in the early 90s, Adam.
I'm sure he had a lot of hair, but they put extensions or something, you know. Nope.
I will argue this. The rest of this episode will just argue about Billy Zane's hair in 1991.
When we're done with the show and everything's behind us, we'll have an episode where we can talk about his
hair. Just Billy Zane hair cast. The scene, as you said, it's done.
Yeah.
Audrey feeds him an apple and we're moving on.
Yeah. Look at the two lovebirds.
Whatever. The Hayward house. We're back at it. And shit gets scary. The scene is really good.
Yeah. Doc Hayward and the missus come home, Eileen. And
Eileen. I knew she had a first name.
Well, she's barely in the show. Kind of like Mrs. Horn.
She was in the show one episode. That was sad. Eileen has a little more screen time. Well, I'm sorry. You were saying.
They get back from the grocery store. And Donna is just like, oh, hey. Your buddy, Craig, stopped by. And
Harold Craig.
Doc Hayward just kind of chuckles like, Craig, I watched him die. What are you talking about?
He drowned in my arms. I couldn't save him.
That guy. Yeah. What's he up to?
Besides being running corpse.
Besides being a skeleton.
He was just passing through town as a skeleton.
Yeah, well, Donna starts to freak out because she realizes she just let a crazy person into her home. I really hope she learned a lesson that day.
Do you think that she did, though?
Craig was Doc Hayward's roommate in medical school, and he drowned on Snake River or something along those lines.
He died on a rafting trip. Yeah.
Yeah, and Doc Hayward tried to save him, but was unsuccessful. And while he's telling this story, Eileen calls the number that Wyndham Earle left.
Oh, yeah.
It's a cemetery. Very
spooky.
Yeah, very threatening.
Yeah.
And the present is opened up.
The present.
is... Maybe thought it was going to be a finger or something. But no.
Oh, yeah. They can't afford those kind of prosthetics. It was his next chess move, knight to king's bishop 3.
Oh, you sly dog. I don't play chess. So.
That is solid, solid chess move. We all know that, right? Chess heads. Where are my chess heads at? Did the Hayward parents not tell their kids, like, hey, don't open the door to strangers? My kid knows not to open the door to strangers.
It's Twin Peaks or a small town. They don't lock
51,000 people, Adam. Not a small town. I'm just going by the facts here. Now, my quick question to you is, why was this given to Doc Hayward? If it isn't explicitly stated in the
show
later on.
Maybe he didn't want her to open it right away.
Because you think that if he wanted Donna to open it, he would have left it for Donna or found some way to get it to Donna.
Like I said, maybe he didn't want her to open it right away and just said, oh, it's for your dad, knowing that eventually it would be opened and she'd know what it was. I don't know what he's thinking.
You don't know what a psychopath is thinking? Fine. Well, in the meantime, we're going to go from one household to another.
What household are we going to?
We are going to the Hurley House.
Oh, yeah, Hurley House.
We get an exterior shot of Big Ed's gas farm, and I thought perhaps we were finally going to see him do some work, you know, like pay the bills, but no. Instead, we're inside the house, where we get some more of the world's worst mental health practitioner.
Yeah.
Hooray.
Looks like Jacoby is sitting down with Ed and Nadine because, as we know from the previous episode, that Nadine wants to break up, and that Ed is proposed to Norma, and he's head over heels, and he's ready to move on with his life. So they're trying to make it happen, and Jacoby's there because of her mental state right now.
Right, and Ed is gonna do it. He's gonna pull the Band-Aid off, right? No. He's hemming and hawing, and he's being a little wiener about it, and he's like, Nadine, he says something along the lines of, I'm gonna paraphrase, Nadine, you're with Mike, and I'm with Norma, and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he doesn't say, and that means we're going to get a divorce.
Right, and then Jacoby, super helpful, he follows it up with, do you get what Ed is trying to say? And the answer is no. No one knows what anybody's talking about because no one's getting to the fucking point.
And it's almost like no one is really listening to what Nadine is saying because it's clear to the audience she is not aware that this is a divorce. As Ed and Jacoby are talking, Nadine chimes in with a, you know, hey, Ed, I don't want to see any jealous rampages, or I'm paraphrasing here.
Right.
But maybe just one. So it's clear that she is still infatuated with Ed.
Yeah.
And this scene is really important because we can tell Nadine is starting to wake up. She's starting to come out of her high school stupor because she acknowledges that her eye is missing now.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, wait a sec. You know, she's waking up, essentially.
She says that, and then Ed says, I give up. I mean, he hasn't actually tried. He's being a real coward. He's not being a bookhouse boy.
No,
right, in this situation.
It's tough for him. He feels responsible for any